Random House Audiobooks presents Cry to Heaven by Anne Rice. Read for you by Tim Curry. Cry to Heaven. Guido Maffeo was castrated when he was 6 years old and sent to study with the finest singing masters in Naples. The soft-spoken men who had taken him from his mother's hands asked him to sing for them, and afterwards they rewarded him with red wine full of honey. He was almost asleep when they strapped him to a table. He was being stroked by silken hands that moved between his legs to give him a wicked little pleasure. When the knife came, he opened his eyes, screaming. The memory of all this never left him. It was the year 1715. Louis XIV had just died. Mozart's father had not yet been born. Johann Sebastian Bach was 30. Italian opera had conquered the world. Alessandro Scarlatti's Il Tigrane was in Naples. Vivaldi's Narone Fatta Cesare was in Venice. But Guido knew nothing of the world. Naples was more wondrous than anything he had ever beheld, and the conservatorio to which he was brought, overlooking town and sea, seemed as magnificent as a palazzo. The black dress with its red sash he was given to wear was the finest cloth he'd ever touched, and he could scarcely believe he was meant to stay in this place, to sing and play music forever. The discipline of the conservatorio was nothing. He had a soprano voice that could shatter glass. He scribbled melodies every time he was given a pen, learning to compose before he could read and write. His teachers loved him. But as time passed, his understanding deepened. Guido realized that not all the musicians around him had been cut as little boys. Some would grow up to be men, to marry, to have children. But no matter how well the violinists played, no matter how much the composers wrote, none could ever achieve the fame, the riches, the pure glory of a great castrato singer. It was for him that kings vied and audiences held their breath. It was the singer who brought to life the very essence of the opera. That his parents had sold him outright was now obvious to him. Of a people swarthy and stocky of build, he did not grow into a reed of a eunuch, as did many around him. Rather, his form was heavy, well-proportioned, and gave a deceptive impression of power. His would have been a pleasing appearance had it not been for two factors. His nose, broken by a childhood fall, was flattened as if a giant hand had squashed it. And his brown eyes, large and full of feeling, glinted with the wily brutality of the peasants who had been his forefathers. Reaching his 15th year, Guido woke one morning to be told that he must come downstairs to the office of the maestro. The maestro, behind the carved table, dipped his pen, scratched large figures in ink. December, 1727. "That is the date," said the maestro, "upon which you will appear in your first opera in Rome as primo uomo." So Guido had done it. "Rome," he whispered, as he stepped out into the corridor. "Rome!" And he let it roll off his tongue, that thick explosion of breath that men have said with awe and terror for 2,000 years. Rome. When Tonio Tresci was 5 years old, his mother pushed him down the stairs. She hadn't meant to do it. She had only meant to slap him. But he had slipped backwards on the marble tile and fallen down and down, a panic engulfing him before he reached the bottom. He had hidden from her hours after the fall. The great Palazzo Tresci swallowed him. He crept back to her finally, as he always did when the servants had despaired of finding him. She lay sobbing on her bed. And there he appeared, a man of 5 years, bent on revenge, his face red and streaked with dirt from his crying. As soon as she opened her arms, he flew into her lap and lay against her breast. She was little more than a girl herself, but he didn't know it. "Tonio," she said impulsively, rocking like a child. "There's still time. I'm taking you with me to San Marco." Never had Tonio witnessed such a spectacle. Candles everywhere wreathed the marble columns, and in the gusts from the open doors, the torches roared in their sconces. Trumpets blared. The Doge appeared in his great chair under a swaying canopy. Incense filled the air. Then came the Grand Council in their brilliant robes. The tall, bone-thin figure of Andrea Tresci came into view, sleeves down to the floor, his white hair the shape of a lion's mane, his deep-set pale eyes fixed like those of a statue before him.
"Papa!"
Tonio's whisper carried sharply. But suddenly from out of the air it seemed a great singing burst forth, voices high and clear and declaring. It came in waves from either side of the immense nave, melody interwoven with melody. Tonio could almost see it, a great golden net thrown out as if on the lapping sea in shimmering sunlight. And finally he saw, right above, the singers. Tonio had dropped to the floor. He dashed through the press of skirts and cloaks and saw the open door to the stairway. Suddenly he stood in the warmth of the choir loft itself, looking up into the eyes of a giant of a man whose voice poured out of him as clean and golden as the clarion of the trumpet. The man sang the one great word, "Alleluia!" Tonio opened his mouth. He sang the one word right in time with the tall singer. The singer was nodding to him, and then an arm wound down about his waist to lift him. Tonio's body went away, carried out on the air with his voice and the singer's voice as the sounds became indistinguishable. When it was over and he was placed in his mother's arms again, she looked up to this giant as he made her a deep bow and said, "Thank you, Alessandro."
"Alessandro?" Tonio whispered. "Mama, when I grow up, will I sing like Alessandro? Mama, I want to be one of those singers."
"Good Lord, Tonio, no." She burst out laughing. He was 9 years old before he learned that Alessandro and all the tall singers of San Marco were eunuchs. But it was a commonplace mystery. They sang in all the churches of Venice. They taught music when they were old. Tonio's tutor, Beppo, was a eunuch. By this time, too, Tonio knew he was Marcantonio Tresci, the son of Andrea Tresci, who had once commanded the galleys of the Serenissima on foreign seas and had just been elected to the Council of Three. In other words, Tonio's father was among those more powerful than the Doge himself. The name Tresci had been in the Golden Book for a millennium. Three brothers of Tonio, all long dead, the children of a first wife gone to the grave too, had served in high places. Tonio would certainly take his place among those young statesmen. It would be the University of Padua before that, 2 years at sea, a tour of the world, and for now, hours spent in the library of the palazzo, under the gentle but relentless eyes of his tutors. Portraits hung on these walls. Tonio perceived his resemblance to some more than others, dead uncles, cousins, those brothers. All three sons with their father and his somber first wife peered from the grandest of gilt frames in the longer supper room. Long before he knew the full import, he'd been told that only one son of a great Venetian family marries. It was custom so old it might have been law. If any of those shades had lived long enough to produce a son of the Tresci name, Tonio would not be here. His father would never have taken a second wife. The very price of life for him was that his brothers had been swept away. Yet he played his fantasy out. He saw these yawning rooms brilliantly lit, pictured soft-spoken men and women who were his own kin, a swarm of nameless cousins. And always his father was about, at supper, on the ballroom floor, turning to catch his youngest son in his arms with a wealth of spontaneous kisses. As it was, Tonio seldom saw his father. Tonio would never remember the precise moment he perceived the full dimensions of his universe. All the world, it seemed, rode the broad green waters of the Grand Canal at his...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?